Chapter 26, Post-Havisham Blues. The bellman lived in a grace and favour apartment at Norland Park when he wasn't working in the hunting of the snark. He had been head of jurisdiction for 20 years and was required, under Council of Genre's mandate, to stand down. The bellman, oddly enough, had always been called the bellman. It was no more than coincidence that he had actually been a bellman himself. The previous bellman had been Bradshaw, and before him, Virginia Woolf. Under Woolf, jurisdiction roll calls tended to last several hours. The bellman? Hardest job in fiction. I walked into the jurisdiction offices an hour later. The bellman, Bradshaw, and Harris Tweed were staring at two pieces of broken and scorched metal lying on a desk.
"I can't say how sorry we all are," said the bellman. "We all thought the world of her. Did she tell you about the time the Martians escaped and tried to force the Council of Genres into ordering a sequel? One where they were triumphant?"
"No," I said quietly. "She rarely talked about her past work. What's this?" I pointed at the broken pieces of metal.
"It's the stub axle from the Bluebird. It looks as though it failed through metal fatigue."
"An accident?" The bellman nodded his head. They hadn't got to her after all. Earlier, Bradshaw had shown me the UltraWord reports written by Perkins, Dean, and Miss Havisham. They'd all given it the thumbs up. If Perkins was murdered, it wasn't over UltraWord. Despite all that had happened, I still only had a doctored ejector hat to point to anything suspicious about Havisham's death, and only a misplaced key for Perkins's. Motor racing has its own share of dangers, and Havisham knew it.
"You're off the active list for a few days, Miss Next," said the bellman. "Take it easy at home and come back in when you're ready."
Tweed said, "She was one of the best."
"One in a million," added Bradshaw. "Won't see the likes of her again, I'll be bound." "We want to offer you a permanent job," said the bellman. "A modern system like UltraWord needs people like you to police it. I want you to consider a post here within fiction. Good retirement plan and plenty of perks."
I looked up at him. This seemed to me like rather a good idea. After all, there was no one waiting for me back at Swindon. What did I need the real world for? "Sounds good, Mr. Bellman. Can I sleep on it?" He smiled.
"Take as long as you want."
I got back to Mary's flying boat and sat on the jetty until the sun had gone down, mulling over everything that Miss Havisham and I had done together. When it grew chilly, I moved myself indoors and read over what Miss Havisham had done with her final scene. A professional to the last, she had enacted her own death with a sensitivity I had never seen her exhibit in life. I found a bottle of wine, poured myself a large glass and drank it gratefully. Oddly, I thought there was a reason perhaps I shouldn't be drinking, but couldn't think what it was. I looked at my hand where there had been a name written that morning. Havisham had instructed me to scrub it out, and I had, but even so, I was intrigued and tried to figure out from the small marks visible what had been written there. "Lisbon?" I muttered. "Why would I write Lisbon on my hand?" I shrugged. The delicate red was a welcome friend, and I poured another glass. I found the copy of The Little Prince that Havisham had given me and opened the cover. The book had an odd smell of melons, and the paper felt like a sort of thin plastic. The letters are harsh black against the milky white pages. The text glowed in the dim light of the kitchen, and, intrigued, I took the book into the darkness of the utility cupboard where I could still read it as clear as day. I returned to my place at the table and tried the Read Sensitive Preferences page, the words changing from red to blue as I read them, then back again as I reread them. In this manner, I turned the page glow feature on and off, and then I played with the levels of the background and music tracks. I started to read the book, and as the first words entered my head, a huge panoply of new emotions opened up. As I read the sequence in the desert, I could hear the sound of the wind on the dunes and even feel the heat and taste the scorched sands. The voice of the narrator was different to that of the prince, and no dialogue tags were needed to differentiate them. It was, as Libris had asserted, an extraordinary piece of technology. I shut the book, leaned back on my chair, and closed my eyes. There was a tap at the door.
"Hello!"
Arnold said. Can I come in? Make yourself at home. Drink?
Thank you.
He sat down and smiled at me. I'd never really noticed it before, but he was quite a handsome man.
Where's everyone else?
He asked, looking around. Out somewhere, I replied, waving a hand in the direction of the boat and feeling a bit dizzy. Lola's probably under her latest bow. Randolph is doubtless complaining to someone about it, and I've no idea where Gran is. Have a drink?
You've already poured one.
So I have. What brings you here, Arnie?
Just passing. How are things at work?
Shit. Miss Havisham died. And something, maybe, perhaps, possibly, is wrong. I just don't know what, if at all. Does that make sense?
Kind of. I've heard outlanders sometimes go through a period of imagination freefall, where they start trying to create plot lines out of nothing.
You'll settle down to it. I shouldn't worry. Congratulations, by the way. I read about your appointment in the paper. I held up my glass in salute, and we both drank. So, what's the deal with you and Mary? I asked.
Over a long time, she thinks I'm a loser and...
Tells you to go to hell. Yes, I've heard. What about Lola? Have you slept with her yet?
No.
You must be the only bloke in Caversham Heights who hasn't. Do you want another drink?
Okay. What about you?
Tell me about your husband in the Outland. I don't have a husband. Never did.
You told me.
Probably one of those push-off comments we girls sometimes use. There was this guy named Snood in the Chronogard, but that was a long time ago. He suffered a time
A what?
He got old before his time. He died. I felt confused all of a sudden, and looked at the wine glass and the half-empty bottle of wine.
What's the matter, Thursday?
Oh, nothing. You know when you suddenly have a memory of something and you don't know why? A sort of flashback? He smiled. I don't have many memories, Thursday. I'm a generic. I could have had a backstory, but I wasn't considered important enough. Is that a cat? I mean, is that a fact? Well, I just thought about the white horse in Uffington back home. Soft, warm grassland and blue skies, warm sun on my face. Why would I do that?
I have no idea. Don't you think you've had enough to drink?
I'm fine, right as rain, never better. What's it like being a generic?
It's not bad.
He took another swig of wine. Promotion to a better or new part is always there if you are diligent enough and hang out at the character exchange. I miss having a family. That must be good. My mum is a hoot, and Dad doesn't exist. He's a time-travelling knight-errant. Don't laugh. And I have two brothers. They both live in Swindon. One's a priest and the other...
Is what?
I felt confused again. It was probably the wine. I looked at my hand. I don't know what he does. We haven't spoken in years. There was another flashback, this time of the Crimea. This bottle's empty, I muttered, trying to pour it.
You have to take the cork out first. Allow me.
Arnold fumbled with the corkscrew and drew the cork after a lot of effort. I think he was drunk. Some people have no restraint. What do you think of the well? He asked. It's all right. Life here is pretty good for an outlander. No bills to pay. The weather is always good, and best of all, no Goliath. Spec ops? Or my mother's cooking?
Spec ops can cook?
I giggled stupidly, and so did he. Within a few seconds, we had both collapsed in hysterics. I hadn't laughed like this for ages. The laughter stopped.
What were we giggling about? Asked Arnold.
I don't know. And we collapsed in hysterics again. I recovered and took another swig of wine. Do you dance? Arnie looked startled for a moment.
Of course.
I took him by the hand and led him through into the living room, found a record and put it on the turntable. I placed my hands on his shoulders and he placed his hands on my waist. It felt odd and somehow wrong, but I was past caring. I had lost a good friend that day and deserved a little unwinding. The music began and we swayed to the rhythm. I had danced a lot in the past, which must have been with Filbert Snood, I supposed.
You dance well for someone with one leg, honey.
I have two legs, Thursday.
And we burst out laughing again.
I steadied myself on him, and he steadied himself on the sofa. Pickwick looked on and ruffled her feathers in disgust.
Do you have a girl in the well, Arnie?
Nobody, he said slowly, and I moved my cheek against his, found his mouth, and kissed him, gently and without ceremony.
He began to pull away, then stopped and returned the kiss. It felt dangerously welcome. I didn't know why I had been single for so long. I wondered whether Arnie would stay the night. He stopped kissing me and took a step back.
Thursday, this is all wrong.
What could be wrong? I asked, staring at him unsteadily. Do you want to come and see my bedroom? It has a great view of the ceiling. I stumbled slightly and held the back of the sofa.
What are you staring at?
I asked Pickwick, who was glaring at me.
My head's thumping, muttered Arnold. So's mine.
Arnold cocked his head and listened.
It's not our heads, it's the door.
The door of perception, I noted, of heaven and hell. He opened the door, and a very old woman dressed in blue gingham walked in. I started to giggle, but stopped when she strode up to me and took away my wine glass.
How many glasses have you had?
Two,
I replied, leaning against the table for support.
Bottles,
corrected Arnie.
Crates,
I added, giggling, although nothing actually seemed that funny all of a sudden.
Listen here, gingham woman, I added, wagging my finger. Give me my glass back.
What about the baby?
She demanded, staring at me dangerously.
What baby? Who's having a baby? Honey, are you having a baby?
It's worse than I thought, she muttered. Do the names Aornis and Landon mean anything to you?
Not a thing, but I'll drink to them if you want. Hello, Randolph.
Randolph and Lola had arrived at the doorstep and were staring at me in shock.
What?
I asked them.
Have I grown a second head or something?
Lola, fetch a spoon, said Gingham Woman. Randolph, take Thursday to the bathroom.
Why?
I collapsed in a heap.
I can walk, and why is there a carpet on the wall?
The next thing I saw was the view down the back of Randolph's legs and the living room floor, then the stairs, as I was carried up over his shoulder. I started to giggle, but the rest was a bit blurry. I remember choking and throwing up in the loo, then being deposited in bed, then starting to cry.
She died. Burned. I tried to help her. It was her hat, you know.
I know, darling. I'm your grandmother. Do you remember?
Gran?
I sobbed, realizing who she was all of a sudden.
I'm sorry I called you Gingham Woman.
It's okay. Perhaps being drunk is for the best. You're going to sleep now and dream. And in that dream, you'll do battle to win back your memories. Do you understand?
No.
She sighed and wiped my forehead with her small pink hand. It felt reassuring and I stopped crying.
Be vigilant, my dear. Keep your wits about you. And be stronger than you have ever been. We'll see you on the other side come the morning.
But she was starting to fade as slumber swept over me. Her voice was ringing in my ears as my mind relaxed and transported me deep into my subconscious.